Yep.
Okay, I'm going to open up this meeting of the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. It is Wednesday, the 26th of April, 2017. Welcome. We have a couple of House bills, a couple of House bills for public hearings and a few bills that we heard last week, I think, for a work session. And we're going to wait for Senator Brzezinski to come before we do the work sessions. And also, we are going to hear some guest testimony on the wood stove issue. But I want to wait for Senator Brzezinski to come for that. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2331 and ask Lindsay to come up, if you would. And in the meantime, Beth, tell us what this is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2331 would extend the authorization that DAS currently has to sell, dispense, and distribute CNG to private entities until January 2nd, 2025.
Okay, thank you. So, Lindsay, what is this?
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair Dunbar, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. I was realizing this is the first time this session I've been before this committee, so I'm quite pleased. Thanks for the chance to testify in front of you about this bill, House Bill 2331. So this really is just a small, you know, housekeeping measure. All it does, as committee staff indicated, is it merely extend the sunset on our DAS's ability to provide, to sell compressed natural gas to private consumers. So in 2009 session, I believe, the legislature granted us authority to use our motor pool CNG facility and sell to members of the public. Some businesses and then some individual private citizens who have compressed natural gas vehicles. At that time, the sunset was put at July of 2014, I believe. We came back during the 13th session and extended that sunset to July of 2018. And we are here this session to request that the sunset be extended from right now, which is 2018, until July of 2025. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. Have you seen consistent use by others of that facility, and or has it increased at all? Do we know?
Chair Dunbro, Senator Roblin, we have seen consistent use. I will note that it's relatively low.
Yeah.
The reason is that essentially that we were authorized to sell is because there's no other commercial outlet between essentially Springfield and then Lakewood, Washington, which are like 90 and then maybe 150 miles away. There's no other facility on that stretch of I-5, essentially. And so since we had the infrastructure to sell to our, or to provide fuel for our fleet vehicles, it made sense to allow selling to the public as well. So if the committee would like, I'm happy to provide data on the exact numbers of, but I don't have that handy, sorry.
Thanks, no problem. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure it was still being used because I agree, I think it needs to be there. I wish we had more commercial outlets available, but we don't have a big fleet yet, so thanks.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Olson.
Is it profitable? Do you make a profit on what you sell to the public?
Chair Dunbro, Senator Olson, I don't think that we make a profit. I think that we essentially break even, but I could find the numbers. I will note that it's cheaper to the public to buy that fuel as opposed to any other gasoline, right? However, I don't know exactly the number, what the margin is.
Well, we follow up. Mm-hmm. We have a budget shortfall, so I thought perhaps we could make it up.
That's good creative thinking.
That's right.
Keep it going.
That's right.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak on this bill? House Bill 2331. Okay. Seeing not, I'll close our public hearing on House Bill 2331. We'll schedule this for a work session. If you have any problems with it, colleagues, let me know. So at this time, I want to bring up the mayor of Oak Ridge, if you would be willing to come up. So colleagues, this is the deal. We were scheduled to hear House Bill 2748 today. That's the one that has to do with residential solid fuel heating air quality, i.e. wood stoves. But the sponsor of the bill, Representative Johnson, needs to be on the floor because the House has reconvened. So he asked us if we could carry it forward. The mayor has come up to speak to the bill, and we didn't want to make this a wasted trip, so we'd be happy to hear your thoughts on it. Before you do that, though, Beth, could you tell us, do you have information on the bill?
I do.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill would modify the fund to include money received from different sources and expand its use to include the issuance of rebates for the replacement or removal of uncertified wood stoves.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Dembrow and others of the committee for hearing me. Yeah, I just walked in the door and it was like, no, and it's like, oh, no. So thank you. For those of you who don't know, Oak Ridge has...
if you could give us your name.
I'm sorry. Jim Coy, Mayor of City of Oak Ridge. For those of you who don't know, City of Oak Ridge has been the only city in the whole state that has been on the verge of serious non-attainment for the last 2.5 years. We've been able to avoid that classification with a lot of hard work from a lot of volunteers and partners. And I'm happy to say that as of December 31st, our air quality is now, it's not official because we still have to go through procedure with the EPA and maintenance and et cetera, but we've had the best year we ever had and took that monkey off our back, so to speak. So I testified up here with the House in February 1st and trying to get this legislation passed through. We've come up with a very good plan for our community that has worked, and like I said, in 2 years we've had the best records we've had in decades. We've gone from an average of usually around 40, which the threshold's 35, to last year 21, and our 3-year average is at 31, which is fantastic. We've done it with a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of hard work and help from a lot of volunteers and partners like Lane Electric and the Forest Service, St. Vincent de Paul, the Southern Willamette Forest Collaborative, and others. And what we've done is created a very diverse package of how to do this. Now, we've done this in the last 2 years without changing out one wood stove. So that's where some of this started, that it was all tied around wood stove changeouts. We've done it with supplying dry seasoned firewood, education, code enforcement. That's been a big one. Lane Electric supplying ductless heat pumps. You know, a lot of people have this misconception that this is all about economics, and it's not. It's really about culture. You know, we live in a timber community or a former timber community. So this has been a lot of hard work, and we've been able to make it through. And here we are today with some of this legislation that we'd like to see continue through. We've made a few changes to what had come out, and I believe that's with the LC. So I don't think you've seen it yet, but it has been submitted, and it's working with the DEQ and Lane County to create a package that I think works statewide. So that's what I came up to say.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any questions?
I'm sure Senator Brzezinski has one.
No, not question. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for – I know that things change, but I'm happy and pleased that you're willing to allow the mayor to actually express what he was going to be telling us on the record if we had the hearing. But I will say that in my working with Jim and the mayor and the city, they've done an extraordinary job. I've had the opportunity to sit in some of the meetings with LRAPA, DEQ, as to some of the issues that they've been faced with, and it is quite interesting how, with the right approach for this city, they've been able to do what they've been able to do. And that's, I think, the part for us to remember. It's not one size fits all, and multiple cities have multiple needs, and we need to make certain when the legislation's before us, we give as much broadness to it for those cities and communities that can actually achieve what we all want, but not necessarily the same way because it doesn't work maybe in one community what would work in a different one. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, Senator Linthicum.
Thank you for speaking to this issue. Oak Ridge and Klamath Falls are, you know, both right. trapped in the PM 2.5 quagmire. And you mentioned specifically without wood stove changeouts, Klamath Falls has spent enormous amounts of money on wood stove changeouts. You referred to heat pump exchanges and whatnot. Were those subsidized through EPA grants of any sort?
Some of them were, and it wasn't EPA. It was through Bonneville Power.
Bonneville Power.
So we did, Lane Electric did, I think, 48 of them last year. So what we've done is we have a group of people in town that are sole source. And there's, I think, 62 this year. And they get an exemption to be able to burn on what we call red days, which are those days that there is no burning. Which we've only had one in the last 2 years, thank God to the weather. You know, it's been very cooperative with us. But they've helped, and like I said, they're one of the partners. So 16 out of the 48 were subsidized through Bonneville. The rest have been people that just decided or saw the future, I guess, and decided that they needed to change. The other thing we've done is so the program we've created, and it's, we were part of this DEQ task force last year, and came up with a program that what we would like to see is weatherization, ductless heat pumps, stove changeouts if necessary, and weatherization. And with those things, I think we solve the problem. Now, does it change? Because I know Klamath Falls has had some luck with changeouts. But that's, I think, an east side, west side thing because drier climate, et cetera. For us, I mean, we've, back in 2009 when we had that funding before that several of us, you know, communities shared, we changed out 50 stoves and, again, didn't change the numbers. It's about dry firewood and education and, like I said, that code enforcement. So we're hoping to get some funding. I understand funding's an issue. To help us, you know, further this approach, and that would be to go after. We're using a Lane Community College to inspect these households to verify, you know, are they indeed sole source? Is their stove compliant? Do they need to be weatherized? And then have an education and going that way. We're using their energy management program, so it gives them some field training that they can go use. We've worked out a deal with them, so we have our next session of inspections coming up here in the next few weeks. And so that tells us how many we need to actually go tackle. And about half of those households are near the monitoring station that we have. So we believe that this approach will solve the problem for us.
Follow up, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know what the average price of a Douglas heat pump is? I'm asking in relationship to, I know what they're changing out wood stoves for, and I'm curious what the cost curve looks like.
They're about the same. A DHP is installed is around $4,000.
Okay.
Give or take some. And it depends on how many, you know, how big the unit is, of course, but for an average unit, it's about the same cost as a wood stove change out, which is around $4,000.
Mm-hmm. But is there a difference in the future costs?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Obviously, wood. You know, if you're able to, and that's the thing. We have a large senior disabled population, so they're not always able to go get the wood, so they're having to pay retail for it, and a lot of times they're buying green, and that's part of the problem. If they're able to go get their own, well, yeah, you're $25 for a permit, and you go cut your own wood. Ductless heat pumps are about a third the cost as far as actual energy cost of a standard forced air unit. So yeah, long term it is much cheaper to go with a ductless heat pump. And you get air conditioning in the summertime when you need it, which, you know, a wood stove can't do.
Which consumes more energy.
Well, yeah. Yes, it does. But one of the things also that Lane Electric has done is those days for people that are income qualified on those red days, if we have or when we have them, they will give free power that day. But the other side to a ductless heat pump, you got to weatherize. You can't have a house that leaks like a sieve with a ductless heat pump. You're wasting your time. That's where the wood stove you almost want a sieve, you know. So it's you know, this real change out, and how do we solve the problem? So,
right. Yeah. Well, thanks for your
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I appreciate you mentioned a couple times dry wood. Mm-hmm. That's always been a huge problem because marketers go out there and they sell you stuff and they say, oh, it's seasoned. Well, when if you put a moisture meter on, it's 19%. So you're burning wet wood and it's causing you a lot of problems. And yep. And I thank you very much for mentioning the fact that it needs to be dry firewood.
So, Mr. Chair, if you indulge us, Jim, if you could just tell us about the procedure that y'all had with the getting yeah. wood in, because I think this was talking about a community-based project.
I'd be glad to. So Southern Willamette Forest Collaborative is part of our community. It was begun there a couple years ago, and they've been working with the city. 2 years ago, we had Roseburg Lumber that was able to donate some of their butts and ends to us from a cut they'd done up on the hill above town. And so they used their excavator to load it. We used our city dump trucks to haul it. This year, we had another contribution from them, but we also had one from Seneca. That was, they'd done a big railroad tie order and had a bunch of ends and cuts from that. So we ended up with a bunch of basically 9x9s. They were all dry and seasoned. So over the last 2 years, we've sold, I think, 170 cords at a reduced rate for senior and disabled. And those on exemption list get a cord for $125. It's $20 for delivery. A lot of times the guy goes, never mind, you know, depending on the person. Retail was $175 this year. We're not making money, but we've been able to do it with some grants and with the help of some partners. We had one of our local rock crushers haul the Seneca for us, and, you know, so, yeah, we've been able to do this. And it also gives us, when we sell the wood, I mean, it's gone in about 3 hours. The last time we did it was several months ago. But it gives us 15 minutes with that person to educate them on, because the wood stove you have today is not the wood stove you used 30 years ago. So there's a different process to it. And it's we've gone from, like I said, 40 to 21 in 2 years. So I think that's, all the pieces are working. And this, dealing with the EPA has not been fun. It's a long process. It's a tedious process, and there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that we've had to create to make this problem go away. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes,
what's your trajectory? Are you going to go below 21? Do you think you can continue down, or?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we had one exceedance in January, which wasn't necessarily a red day, but it was close. We should still be in good shape, but, you know, we'll see what happens in the fall. You know, we've been blessed. Where this really comes into play on the red days for us, because for those who don't know, Oak Ridge is a narrow valley. Excuse me. And on those red days, if we have a sunny, clear day in the wintertime, there's no wind.
Right.
And that's when we have the problem. You know, 2/3 of town can be clear and sunny, and you have that one pocket where the monitoring station is that's nearest the river that is, you can't even see next door. So we've had the breeze, you know, when we had those clear sunny days, we've been having enough breeze to be able to, I mean, there's been some tense moments, but we've been able to make it through so far. So we think that by hopefully getting some funding and having these new changes to a bill, that we'll be able to go in and tackle this problem and actually make it go away for us. And I think it's going to be a good test for the rest of the state as well, something that people can adapt. I mean, there's 25 pieces to this puzzle for us. So
great. Thank you. Senator.
Just to follow up, as you were describing the weather situations, inversions are a big problem.
Yes.
in your narrow valley, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Have those statistically, do you have tracking on how many days have been inversion days or not? I'm one in my focus and wonder is, without inversions, are you just cleaning, running fine, burning clean and good air quality? And if inversions happen to occur, would you be behind the eight ball?
As we are right now, if we have the inversions, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And we average about, typically in the past, like I said, the last 2 years, we've been very clean. But typically, we average about 10 to 12 days a year, and that's what throws us out of the threshold.
And then one last follow-up. It's probably because on this side, nobody really knows what dry wood looks like. Come to Klamath, and I'll show you some dry wood.
Yeah. No, there's it's very different, that's for sure. But, you know, with the wood program, we have a moisture meter. We were able to, you know, purchase, and we do test the wood. We have one of our we have a wildland fire company that a contractor that actually processes the wood for us. So it's been a real community involvement. They do get paid to do that, and they have some of their guys that will deliver it. So it's been a great program, but we have been blessed with good weather. So.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor, for hearing
coming
me.
And for the work that you're doing down there. So colleagues, this was, you know, because we had pulled the bill, everything we heard here is not part of the official record. So members of the jury, ignore everything you heard. No, not true. It was very informative and will be useful. We'll be coming back to this issue a week from today, where we had it posted for a work session, but if I assume we'll be able to move forward with this bill. So we'll do the public hearing and the work session on that day. Senator Lincoln.
If I could just add one thing. When I was a Klamath County Commissioner, I spent a lot of time with EPA out of their West Coast office in Seattle dealing with inversions. And inversions are not because of wood smoke or wood stove smoke. Right. Inversions are a weather pattern. Right. And I thought their language for hammering the public because something happened, I likened it to, it's a tornado. You can't blame us that a tornado came through town. This one's just a different name. We call it an inversion, and it impacts the population in a negative fashion, very similar to the way a tornado impacts a population of a trailer park. That argument didn't go anywhere, but I think this body ought to pay attention to what weather patterns do in communities that have a lot of wood heat source heating available. It's an economic and viable way for providing heat in the rural counties, and we need not bury these populations because of something that happens in the overall weather pattern.
You're right.
But there are negative health effects, and so to the extent that we can mitigate those, that's good. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to our agenda and do our second public hearing, which is House Bill 2566. And let's have Al Elkins and Michelle Bodenheiner come up. And as they're doing that, Beth, tell us about this Wild Turkey Day.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2566 would increase the age limit for youth participating in a hunter mentoring program from 14 years of age to 16 years of age.
Okay, Al, you want to kick
this
off?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. For the record, Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. Thank you for scheduling a hearing on House Bill 2566A. This bill passed the House with 56 yeses, no nays, and it was endorsed by the Sportsman's Caucus. The bill was requested by the Oregon Hunters Association. It expands the eligibility or age range to participate in the youth mentor program from between the ages of 9 to 13 to the ages of 9 to 16. It allows the youth through these ages to participate in the program under the close supervision of a licensed adult without first having to pass an approved hunter education program, and he or she does not have to possess their own license or tags. We submitted this request, this bill, because today's youth are extremely busy, and this bill allows them to participate in the youth mentor program, and we hope continue on after they go into adulthood to continue hunting. According to the ODFW statistics, some 20,000 youth have participated safely in the program since its inception in 2007. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Let's hear from Michelle first. Welcome.
Chair Denbrough and committee, my name is Michelle Bodenheimer. I'm the regional director for the National Wild Turkey Federation for Oregon, Washington, and Alaska. I'm also a resident of Portland and a licensed hunter here in the state. The National Wild Turkey Federation is a national NGO representing 230,000 hunters nationwide, including 600 here in the state of Oregon. We also extend our support to non-members who turkey hunt here in the state, which last year totaled just under 16,000. In 2005, the NWTF participated with other NGOs across the country to develop the Families of Field program. The Families of Field program has since been implemented in 39 states, the cornerstone of which is developed an apprenticeship or a mentor hunt program, which allows hunters to safely try under the watchful eye of a mentor before they complete their hunter's education course, as Al has explained. I have submitted written testimony that contains a lot of statistics that support the importance of the mentor hunt, but I wanted to interject some personal testimony on this issue. I volunteered as a mentor through Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Outdoor Skills Program since 2008 and have mentored countless youth out in the field. I also have my own 12-year-old son who has completed 4 years of the mentor program this year. And I've noticed through helping him, it's, you know, the statistics you'll see are going to show that the hunters who've completed a mentor program are much safer in the field than a just regular general license carrier. Where the age change in that is proposed in House Bill 2566 is important is my son is 12 years old. He has a lot of friends that are 13 and 14 years old. Some of his 14-year-old friends have come to me and asked me to mentor them, to take them hunting. It's not a simple answer for them. They have to complete hunter's education first. Then they have to register for a field day. Field days fill up very quickly, and sometimes it's months before they can complete the process to become a licensed hunter. By then, the current season has lapsed, and it might be 6, 7, 8 months before another hunting season is made available. For those of you that have children, you know that sometimes once that spark is there and they're interested, if they have to wait 8 months, that spark is gone. They've lost their interest. We live in a world where children are distracted by cell phones, YouTube, television, school sports. If we don't have an opportunity to capture these youth when they are ready, if they're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, we risk losing them as a lifetime hunter. You're going to see in my written testimony that's been provided, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife relies on their financial revenue is based off of license and tag purchases here in the state, as well as revenue under the Pittman-Robinson Act that has been generated from excise taxes on this recreational, the firearm and ammunition purchases. If we don't have hunters, we don't have funding. If we don't have funding, our wildlife in the state of Oregon suffers. So it's my recommendation on behalf of the National Wild Turkey Federation, Families of Field, and personally, that you present this bill forward with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
Senator Robler.
Thank you. For Al, does the mentor have to use one of his tags? Because you were saying that they don't have to have tags. Or do they get to?
The mentor has all of what the you would need in the field.
Okay. That's okay. So do they give up a tag, for example?
Yes.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out if we could get an extra tag from. But
nice try.
Loophole.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I'll just have to be happy with what we have.
Great. So following up on Michelle's testimony, we are experiencing kind of a reduction in the number of young hunters, aren't we? And is this, you know, partly an attempt to build that?
Yes. Chair Dembro, Al Elkins again, Oregon Hunters Association. Yes, and as she is, the previous speaker said, we're competing with so much more now. This is a chance to get in the door, and we hopefully nurture them along to where they continue as an adult. You're exactly right.
And the idea is to do this investment by letting them, you know, be on someone else's tags. That's going to pay off down the road.
Yeah, and it's a great learning experience to be outdoors and get the feel for what is needed, what the process is, and as the previous speaker said, safety is the number one goal, and these folks do it the right way.
That's great. Yes,
there's a lot of good statistics out there that show that kids that get out fishing when they're really young with somebody continue to fish their whole lives. Those that don't know how to do it. They feel uncomfortable when they get to be adults. They don't ask people, so they never become fishermen. The same is true with hunters. And, you know, I think this program has proved itself to be pretty good. I expect that these kids, once they catch the bug, are going to want to do it. And the other question I had, though, you said 16,000 people came in to hunt turkeys?
Yes. Last year, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Statistics show that 15,605 individuals held, not just held turkey tags last year, but actually registered that they had actively hunted turkey in the field.
Wow, okay. And those are not necessarily Oregonians.
That is correct, Senator Roblin.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you both. Okay, let's have Kelly Hopkins and Roger Beyer, please.
Keeley,
I'm sorry. I knew that. Keeley, you want to start?
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, my name is Keeley Hopkins. I'm the state liaison for the National Rifle Association, here today in support of House Bill 2566. This bill will give more youth the opportunity to experience hunting under the adult supervision without having to complete the hunter education program first, which, as you heard, can be a deterrent for a lot of youth that simply just want to try out the activity. Eventually, the goal for this program is that the youth hunters will enjoy the experience and they'll go on to complete the hunter education course and then continue hunting. This has largely been the case in Oregon and similar states that have similar programs. House Bill 2566 would just help ensure that we continue to invest in Oregon's hunting heritage, which also has vital contributions to conservation, wildlife management, and the economy, particularly in our rural areas. So we'd just encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm a contract lobbyist for the NRA, but here I'm representing myself and going to give you a little history lesson on this program. 10 years ago, Senate Bill 892 was passed with a person by the name of Senator Beyer as its chief sponsor. That Senator Beyer is a slightly different Senator Beyer than the one who's in the chamber today. I'm sitting here before you. So. You'd be happy to know that Senators Brzezinski and then Representative, Speaker.
That's right.
Roblin. No, you weren't Speaker.
No, I wasn't Speaker yet. That's
no,
right.
But Representative Roblin voted for the bill in 2007. That bill passed with no dissenting votes in the Senate and only 4 dissenting votes in the House. And I'm happy to report that the one member of those 4 who voted against it who is still in the House has seen the light and voted for it last week. So. The program has been successful. I would tell you that it's one of the best bills that I ever sponsored and got passed. At that time, we named it Carl's Bill because my youngest son was 12 years old at the time, so he actually got to use the program for 2 years. The original bill, as drafted, we made 2 changes on it in the Senate. One was to add an emergency clause so my son would qualify, so use it that year. But the second change was to lower the age to 14, The original bill as drafted did not have that in it, and I think it, we did that in order to satisfy some concerns some people might have about whether the program was going to work or not. So actually, the original bill had no maximum age in it, so I think this is a good next step. We need to go to 16, give more kids the opportunity. You've heard all the reasons as to why. I think the program has been an overwhelming success. I don't think there's a year that's gone by in the last 10 years that I haven't had friends and acquaintances of mine talk to me about the program and tell me what a wonderful success it's been. They've gotten some of their kids or some of the friends of theirs, nieces, nephews, cousins, you name it. They've all participated in it. So I just urge you to move the bill forward, and maybe we can get unanimous this time in both chambers. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks for that history lesson. That's good. Colleagues, you have any questions? Yes, Senator.
I have one. When they said that was the vote in the House, what was the vote in the House for this bill?
I believe it was 57 or 56 to nothing.
Well, there's more than that over there. So were there? Did you have
four? They were out hundred.
Did you have the four taken out before they could vote? I was just checking.
Yeah, were they the same
really
four?
Unanimous. That's right, exactly. I'm just trying to see who those four were and whether he invited them to stay home that day.
Three of the four weren't successful. The one was.
For your information, Senator, Representative Boone, Clam, and McEwen were excused, and actually the Speaker of the House was also excused. And
they would have all voted for it.
I think.
Well, maybe one. I can't
Representative Nathanson was the only person who is still in the building now who voted against it in 2007, and she voted for it.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you both very much. We'll schedule this bill for probably Good Monday bill. Or sometime soon. Okay, so with that, I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2566A, and let's do our work sessions. Vice Chair, you ready to do some work?
Sure.
All right, I'm going to open our work session on House Bill 2256A, and this is the dietary supplement bill.
And M&Ms? Are the M&Ms the dietary supplement?
Of course they are. Multiple colors.
Vice Chair.
Is she going to describe the bill first, or just want to shoot into it?
We heard it.
Okay, we can do it. Chair Dember, I move House Bill 2256A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 2256A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Is there, yes, Senator Limpicum.
Just in terms of the scope and size of this, I think when we question the individuals who were participating here during testimony, this is from the very first tea bag extract you make and try to sell, the state wants to be involved. And I think I think at some point we just discourage anybody from innovation and creativity in the food supplement industry. So I think this deserves caution because we don't have limits on sales or volume or other factors of production for supplements. It's just from the get-go. And having a commercial kitchen at my home and selling a natural food product, an organic product, at the local grocery store, we started by selling it, to our neighbors and friends and family and whoever, and then finally got into a grocery store, et cetera, with a commercial kitchen license, but not with regard to supplements, integrity or whatever. So I think this is potentially self-defeating to the industry we would like to see blossom in the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, if I can respond to that, I mean, my sense is that there's no responsibility for overseeing if you are, just dealing with your friends and family. But from the moment you're selling, then it kind of enters a new terrain, and people who are buying that product are going to want to assume that this was done under proper circumstances, I guess, hygienic circumstances or whatever. And I think there's an argument that, that is the role of government to give confidence to purchasers.
And my comment to that is correct, and that's why our kitchen is a certified commercial kitchen, to meet that requirement. And the state comes out and does their random inspection. Whenever they have an individual out in the middle of nowhere, Oregon, they come by, stop by our house and say, how do things look? And that's a requirement for sales. This is more than that, though, and that's all I'm suggesting. There might be some volume, some production, some dollar volume, some production volume or something. At one time we were going through hundreds of pounds of raw organic material, repackaging it, labeling it, selling it, and, you know, all under the guise of a commercial kitchen operation. And everybody has always been satisfied, and because it's not, quote, a supplement, we wouldn't fall into this category. But if I added something to this product of ours, which is a whole oat ancient grain product, all of a sudden, boom, I'd be in this net. And so I'm warning against being, creating too much. Because in the same way our family got involved in this super small industry by starting small and growing to finally end up at the local grocery store, other people are looking for the same opportunity. And I think it's fair to allow them room to start out small, grow, and then fall under some a more stringent level of regulation.
Any further discussion? Okay. So, Senator, are you then objecting to the measure?
I will, thank you.
Are there any other objections to the measure? Okay. Seeing none, the measure carries. We could record a 4-1 vote for this. So I'm going to close our work session on House Bill 2256.
Carrier.
Anyone like to carry it? Yes, Senator Brzezinski will carry. Let's open our work session on House Bill 2364. Actually, remind us what this one does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the bill that would fix the incorrect reference in the statute related to the agriculture mediation program.
Yeah. It was one number, wasn't it?
It was one number.
Yeah. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Denver, I move House Bill 2364 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 2364 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion of this one? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion carries.
Okay.
Senator Olson will carry this complex measure.
I can do a long one on this one.
Okay. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2364 and open up our final work session, which is on House Bill 2533A.
That was it.
This is the B bill. Vice Chair Olson.
Chair Denver, I move House Bill 2533A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved House Bill 2533A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion of this measure? Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, motion carries. Anyone like to carry this?
I'll take it.
Okay. Senator Brzezinski will join the B team. And with that, we will close our work session on House Bill 2533A. Colleagues, that does it for today. We have some public hearings tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and a few work sessions.
Okay. All right, great. Okay, so until tomorrow?
1 o'clock.
Is 1 o'clock, schedule? Yeah.
And, okay.
Okay, until 1 o'clock, we are adjourned. Okay, until 1 o'clock, we are adjourned.